the worst, huh? You thought they finally got me, didn't you? Well, I'm unhappy to my enemies to say they didn't. But I'm happy for all of you out there, the rest of you, that they didn't get me. I'm just a wee bit late, and I apologize for that, but it was due to construction, as they call it, reconstruction of the highway. So, unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, we clipped the first few minutes, and now I am pleased to report we are here. And I apologize to my guest, because my guest certainly has a very busy schedule himself. He is Professor David Raymond Griffin. And, of course, he is the author of two books concerning 9/11. And one of them, the first one, The New Pearl Harbor, and the second one, 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. Good evening, Professor Griffin.
Good evening, Rick. And scratch the Raymond, it's just Ray.
Okay, Ray. Sorry about being a little tardy, as you heard me.
But it's just call me David.
All right, David. Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you back. We've had you before.
Yes, indeed.
And pardon me while I get myself, everybody, while I get myself reoriented here, just rushed into the studio. Well, you know, you've had a busy schedule yourself since we last talked on this very program. Several months had gone by, and in that time, you appeared on a number of more interview programs, and you even wound up on C-SPAN 2, I believe, right?
That's right, Book TV in April.
And what was the occasion? They covered your address at the university, I believe?
That's right. I gave a lecture at the University of Wisconsin at Madison.
Mm-hmm.
And C-SPAN showed up. That was a minor miracle. And then a bigger miracle was even after they had heard and, you know, seen the lecture and the higher-ups had seen it, they decided to air it. They aired it, in fact, twice, and then aired it again more recently, just a couple weeks ago. So it's gotten the word out to a lot more people.
And that address contained some pretty damning evidence against the government's conspiracy theory, if you will, about 9/11 and Osama bin Laden, al-Qaeda, and the like. And now we've seen others, such as yourself, and people who are pretty prestigious, you know, very well-respected individuals, some of whom even were in the Bush administration first time around. We've seen one of the professors, Morgan Reynolds, I believe, who also came out and now has expressed quite a bit of doubt about the official story of 9/11 and the collapse of the Twin Towers.
That's right. In fact, I just met Morgan this past week. Mm-hmm. There was a meeting between 9/11 people and Downing Street memo people like Ray McGovern.
Yes.
And other anti-war, anti-Iraq people and those who have been focusing on depleted uranium and how it's threatening to mm-hmm. destroy the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Morgan was there. For your audience who don't know him, he was the chief economist of the Labor Department for about a year of the first term of
right.
this Bush administration. In
exactly.
fact, he had taken the job, gone to work just 1 week before 9/11. So he got a rather rude beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But he has written an article now that has gotten a lot of attention, even picked up by UPI and the Washington Times, of all things, saying that he can't see how the towers could have come down except through the use of explosives, and that mm-hmm. means it had to be an inside job.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and of course now several other books have come out as well, and including by an author that you are very familiar with, I'm sure, and he's in England. His name is Nafis Mossadegh Ahmad, The War on Truth Concerning the 9/11 Disinformation and the Anatomy of Terrorism. I'm sure you've read his book.
Well, exactly, and I'm impressed with your pronunciation.
Yeah,
and Nafis was back at the meeting, too, and was testifying along with Paul Thompson at
yes.
Cynthia McKinney's hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was the C-SPAN came and aired it, whether that's going to be, I mean, they recorded it, whether they're going to air that or not, I believe is still up in the air. But C-SPAN did do an interview with Nafeez, mm-hmm. and that is to be aired by C-SPAN this coming Saturday, Eastern time, that would be 8 p.m., and then on Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So your listeners could tune in to Book TV, that's C-SPAN 2, at either of those times and catch that. Yeah, Nafeez's first book, The War on Freedom, was, along with Thompson's Timeline, my primary sources for my first book,
which
so I'm
I have
highly
as well.
Indebted to
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have that book, and it's a very interestingly laid out book by Paul Thompson. He has also been interviewed by me a long time ago. We'll have him back as well. But there's a growing chorus now, and it's not just from the left wing or the right wing, but from people who have no agenda whatsoever, no ideology, essentially asking questions and scratching our collective wooden heads and asking questions that, quite frankly, the administration cannot or will not attempt to answer. And now we've seen a whole trail, Ray, of lies that have unquestionably been proven to be lies just concerning Iraq alone. And we even have the president's biographer now, who has been working on a biography, saying that he, too, said that Bush, right from the beginning, before he was even president, wanted the White House and wanted to take Iraq. And no question he would doctor or fix the facts, if you will, to fit the agenda. So, I mean, we've seen the lies come out of Iraq. We've seen them about Afghanistan. So how is it that anyone could seriously question people like yourself and others who are now casting doubt on the official Bush story of 9/11, because essentially it was a rubber stamp of the Bush administration's view, I think, anyway.
Well, yes, you know, even right-wing Republicans are now saying some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
One very interesting book that has come out is called America Alone, and the subtitle is The Neoconservatives and the Global Order.
Uh-huh.
And it's written by two Reagan Republicans, Stephen Halper and Jonathan Clark.
Right.
Now, they do not accuse the Bush administration of engineering 9/11, but uh-huh. they do point out that everything the Bush administration has said that 9/11 was the basis for, they point out these were pre-existing programs, pre-existing policies that they were just waiting to have an excuse to enact. And so in that sense, 9/11 was a lie insofar as they've claimed that 9/11 was the reason for going to Afghanistan, the reason for going to Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So they're accusing them of outright lying.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not such a big step to say, well, actually, they're lying a little more, that they're lying about whether that it was just Al-Qaeda that pulled it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, look at Paul O'Neill, who is the Secretary of the Treasury, and, of course, you know, his book about the price of loyalty and what the administration had done, even on the domestic front, in attempting to distort the whole budget and the Medicare program, the so-called prescription for reform. Now it turns out it's more than double, and it may be triple the ultimate cost. And essentially, that was a deliberate policy to hide the hidden costs of just that one program, never mind the size of the debt. I mean, this administration, for all of its proclamations of being conservative, has taken a budget and doubled non-defense spending as well.
Well, that's another reason these a lot of genuine conservatives are
right.
just appalled by this administration. That is, that there is a complete divorce between genuinely conservative policies and these neoconservative policies
mm-hmm.
that are just outright radical policies that have no concern for the future of the earth, the future of any peoples, and even any concern for the future of America.
Absolutely none, yeah. And by the way, let me just tell our audience, we're speaking with Dave Griffin, and you've read his books, many of you. You've seen them on the net if you haven't read them. And, of course, the last book, The 9-11 Commission, don't have it in front of me, but the title, The 9-11 Commission, Omissions and Distortions. Is that right? That's the title?
Yeah, The 9-11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. I think since we talked before, I've written a little summary mm-hmm. of that book that I've, because many times I said, you know, that's kind of a mild subtitle because you hear omissions and distortions, you might think, oh, well, you know, maybe there were five or six omissions
yeah.
and a couple distortions. No. So I said, I quite often joked, I should have just called it the 9-11 Commission Report, a 571-page lie. And so actually I decided finally to write that up. So I have an article by that name that is now published on the 9-11 Visibility Project website, which is www.September11, fully spelled out.
Okay, hold that thought. Dave, we got to take a break.
Okay.
When we do, we'll pick up there and invite callers to dial in. I'm Rick Adams, your radio avenger, the Paul Revere of Talk Radio. We shall return with more.
Spreading the word. Tell your friends Rick Adams is on RBNLive.com.
Yes, we are on, and our guest is David Raymond Griffin, Dave Griffin, who has authored two books now on 9-11, and he's done a lot of yeoman research, by the way. He didn't just decide because of his theology degrees and his concern for right and wrong that he would just put together a mishmash of what other people said, but he did some very original research, and he was inspired by the nature of what happened and what he saw happen first on 9-11 with the so-called collapse of the Twin Towers. And again, the so-called four planes that had purportedly been hijacked. And as he points out, just the second book he's written, Omissions and Distortions of 9-11 Commission Report, have revealed many, many, many fatal flaws in this report. Makes you wonder, Ray, exactly how any of these people could have any self-respect left at all. I mean, here's Lee Hamilton. He's not your real far-eyed cuckoo clock, dyed-in-the-pan, nutcake type of individual who flies off the handle. I mean, he up until now, he's had a great degree of respectability, and yet he's a vice chair of the committee, this commission. And he, with a straight face, will still basically swear by it.
Yeah, of course, when you dig a little deeper, you find that there are some dissenting voices about him, and people pointed that out at the meeting this week, people who remember the Iran-Contra affair that he was involved in the investigation of, and many people, such as Peter Dale Scott, point out that Hamilton was a chief factor in aiding and abetting much of the cover-up of that scandal, which was much worse than most people realized, even after the hearings.
Yeah, but
so he doesn't have such an impeccable record.
Oh, I wouldn't say that his record is impeccable, but when you look at him and the way he is presented, again, he's presented as Mr. Stern, respectable, Mr. Principal, and I think that that's the way the media, the major media who have been covering up so much here, have been able to latch on to this thing and present it as some sort of, if you will, oracle from God. And it's anything but.
Well, that's right. And, of course, that's the way these commissions do. They generally get people who are tall and have this aura of authority about them. And Thomas Kane, former governor of New Jersey, and president of Drew University. I mean, who could be more respectable? But the truth is that they didn't really direct the commission. They were more or less the figureheads, as were all the commissioners that we saw on TV. The work was done by the staff of about 80 people, and that staff was directed by the executive director, Philip Zelikow. And Zelikow was the White House's man inside the commission. I mean, he was essentially a member of the Bush administration. He had been with Condoleezza Rice in Bush 1, the first President Bush's administration on the National Security Council. Then when the Republicans were out of office, he and Condoleezza Rice wrote a book together. Then when she was named National Security Advisor for Bush 2 administration, she brought him on, Zelikow on, to help with the transition for the National Security Council. Then Bush appointed him to the Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board. And then when Condoleezza Rice went to the State Department, she brought him there. So they're extremely tight. They're both good friends and ideologically on the same page. And yet this is the guy who's supposed to be investigating whether the White House did anything improper. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. And the national press did very little to alert the American people to this, so they call it the Cain Report, and it should be called the Cain-Zelikow Report, or simply just the Zelikow Report. And we would know that was ridiculous if it were called the Cheney Report or the Rumsfeld Report or the Rice Report. Zelikow is on the same page as all those people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question about it. And each and every day now we're beginning to put more pieces of the puzzle together here. And we see what has happened in the last few weeks with the London bombings and Tony Blair's attempts to attempt to pass some rather draconian legislation a la 9/11 Homeland Security here in America. And, of course, up until those bombings, the legislation was meeting with some pretty stiff opposition. And, of course, that has turned the tide rather conveniently for the government. So, again, we ask ultimately the questions that need to be asked. And one of them always is qui bono. Who benefits from these so-called terror bombings? And, you know, who's directly responsible and whether there's really this Al-Qaeda network. I mean, even the BBC says there's no such thing as an Al-Qaeda network. They don't recognize it as such because it's it's this very convenient image of this worldwide terror network that has bases in virtually every country. And you know, that's rather convenient for people who want to, and as the neocons do, want to engage in a worldwide campaign. All right, stay where you are, Ray Griffin. We will be back with our callers, Scott, Rodney, and you, 800-313-9443. Our guest, Dave Griffin. I'm Rick Adams. Get on the line.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Get back at him with Rick Adams, the Radio Avenger on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yes, we are back, and once again, our guest on the program Uncensored Radio Free America is Dave Griffin, and he has authored these two books on 9/11, and he is a distinguished professor emeritus, I believe, at St. Clair College, is it, or Mount Clair?
I'm emeritus at the Claremont School of Theology Claremont Graduate University in Southern California.
We got to do these interviews more often. Claremont, right. I remember now. All right. And let's go to the phones right now. 800-313-9443 is our number. Questions about 9/11, the report, and, of course, the whole, if you will, structure of what the government has said in its, its conspiracy theory about Al-Qaeda. Let's go to the phones and say hello to Scott, Massachusetts. Hello, Scott.
Hi, Rick.
Hello there.
Hi, David.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, good, thanks. I appreciate all the work you do. Just wanted to make a statement about the planes, four planes involved on 9/11. And from what I understand, they don't have one part with one serial number from one plane to this day. That's what I understand. And
that's right, as far as I know. There's a lot of mystery about this, and why they don't is not clear.
Right. And these neocons, the only thing they want to conserve is their power. There's nothing else conservative about them at all. And that's my feeling about these people who are doing this. I think they're traitors. I'm waiting for the American people to rise up. And I think that the turning point, these people are scrambling now. They're worried, I believe. And I think the turning point was the Galloway incident in front of the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think at that point things started turning around and going wrong for the people in power right now. Even those behind the scene continue. But what I wanted to ask, David, was a lot of people right since day one talked about following the money, who made money, who did the puts, who did the financial dealings, what was lost in that building. And besides the people behind the scenes who benefited with it, you know, you never heard anything about follow the money. And I was wondering, how did you follow the money yourself?
Well, certainly one thing is that story about the put options. And let me say, just for the listeners who may not know about this, that there were extraordinary numbers of put options purchased on American Airlines, United Airlines, and Dean Witter, which had 22 floors of the World Trade Center.
That's right.
And a put option, when you buy a put option, it means you're betting that the stock in the company is going to go down. And so the amounts of put options, there are different estimates. Some people say whoever bought most of these made, in the range of many tens of millions of dollars. Some estimate as much as a billion. I don't know, but it was a lot. And the 9/11 Commission report, just to illustrate, it's kind of, this is a case of a distortion rather than an omission. It said, well, we looked into this and we found that there was nothing funny going on, because we found the agent who bought 95% of the United stock, and that could not have been based on inside information, they said, because this agent had no conceivable tie to Al-Qaeda. So it was a perfect example of how the commission simply presupposed its premise, which
right.
is that the attacks were planned entirely by Al-Qaeda and that nobody knew about them other than members of Al-Qaeda. And so, therefore, if this guy didn't know anybody in Al-Qaeda, he couldn't have possibly had inside information.
Right.
So they use their premise, their assumption, as a fact.
Right.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah, and that's one I came up then in that article I wrote, 115 of these omissions and distortions, and this is one of the milder ones.
Right. And then, David, you look, myself, as I look at it, when I saw the building straighten out, I was just like jumping out of my seat going, what the heck is going on here? As it came down, it straightened out. I went, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But so it was right from day one for me. But as this goes on, something's got to happen. The bubble has to break. This pimple has to come to a head. And I'm wondering what you see, David. I'm just asking you to prophesy for me a little bit in your theology, in your prayer life. Something must come to you from the Lord. I know things come to me.
Well, one thing about being a theologian is you learn the dangers of prophecy, and I don't engage in it. But, of course, we all engage in wishful thinking, so I'll do a little bit of that. It does seem like there is a slight opening now, believe it or not, in the mainstream press. I mean, the very fact that C-SPAN not only carried me, but now is carrying Nafiz. Now, C-SPAN is not what you'd call the mainstream press, but it's sort of halfway there. and it's got a national audience. So that's very, very significant.
And the senior correspondent is a Jew. I mean, the senior guy behind the scenes, behind Brian Lamb, I mean, that's a Jewish organization like most of them, as far as I can tell, David. That's
well,
my own take on it.
Yeah, I don't get into those kinds of issues because these things are so complex, and I don't speculate about motives and so on. But I've just been contacted by representative of a major press, and this is the first time that I have been contacted to do an interview.
Be careful playing ball with these guys, David, because I don't trust any of them. So I love you to death, brother, and I'm going to pray for you. And God bless you too, Rick Adams.
Thank you. Thank you, Scott, for your call. You know, it's interesting because the press, as you know, Dan Rather in particular, was seen to be rather conspicuously attempting in his own little way to try to bring down George Bush before the election. And yet Dan Rather is all too well familiar because he was on the air during the collapse of Building 7. When that whole episode took place, and Building 7 did not just collapse, as we've seen, it was a controlled demolition, and now we know the owner said that he did bring it down. So, you know, here we have Dan Rather, if he really and truly wanted to dig a little deeper, pardon the pun, you know, and the rest of the media, just these simple omissions and distortions that have been seen in the commission report, my goodness, and the ties to Bush, the connections, the, you know, the back alley type of politics involved, they'd have a field day if they really and truly were permitted to bring down Bush on those grounds, but they don't seem to want to touch them, you know, for whatever reason.
No, but, you know, they didn't want to touch Nixon for a long time, too, and then that changed. And when it changed very rapidly.
Yeah, so they were different
from
that as well.
So the elite and the country may at some point decide that Bush, the Bush-Cheney administration is more of a liability than an asset, and it's time to cut their losses.
I mean, I think that's it, because let's face it, the major media are controlled by a handful of families, and they are all globalists, as is George Bush. They're internationalists, they're Zionists, they're globalists, and George Bush is doing basically their bidding. Look at NAFTA, look at CAFTA, look at all of these things going on, even as we speak, and the borders, the lack of control. I mean, here we are telling Syria that they have to mind their own P's and Q's and get out of Iraq, stay out of Iraq while we illegally occupy Iraq and yet cannot control our own borders. I mean, this is preposterous, Dave. This is absolutely amazingly preposterous.
Yeah, but they get away with it because,
absolutely,
as you say, they do.
It's one big family, Dave. It's one big media family. And that's why when I get on the net and I subscribe to newspapers, I always go to the international press, where you know at least some of the foreign media are not completely corporate control in Europe, in Asia, and in other parts of the world. And they are revealing much of what you have revealed in your books. I mean, that's just a simple fact of life.
Well, there is so much to reveal that you know, it's really beyond belief. When to get back to the 9/11 Commission report, I talked about some of these extraordinary lies. Let me mention another one. Since we were talking about the buildings coming down, and I don't know if I've talked about this one on your show before, but one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Is how they explain how these twin towers, mm-hmm. which were 110 stories high, mm-hmm. and there was there were 47 massive steel columns that constituted the inner core of each building that went from the sub-basement up to the roof, in fact, above the roof a little bit. And yet these buildings collapsed into a pile of rubble just a few stories high. Well, how is that possible? What happened to those steel columns?
Mm-hmm.
And the only way those steel columns could have disappeared is if they had been broken into small pieces by explosives. And, of course, the 9/11 Commission report can't say that. So what they do is deny that those columns existed.
They
said the core of each building consisted of a hollow steel shaft filled with elevators and stairwells. Well, there were elevators and stairwells, but they were in between.
That's right.
These 47 massive steel columns that...
They were anything but hollow. There's no question. I think the only thing that was hollow was the report, actually, when you come right down to it.
Well,
right,
yeah.
We've got too many people that want to speak to you, and I don't know how much time you have tonight, so let's do it. Let's go right back to the phones.
Okay.
And Dave Griffin is our guest. Again, I'm Rick Adams. For those of you just joining in, the program Uncensored, Radio Free America on Republic Broadcasting Network, and the Radio Avenger will take, let's see, we've got Josh in Texas next. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good. Got a question or a comment for Dave Griffin?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, anybody can answer, really. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, sorry. The first thing I want to say is I really appreciate what you're doing here, entertaining the free exercise of thoughts and ideas. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Democratic Party really needs something, you know, to sort of jumpstart it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you agree with that, but just to sort of gather it, sort of needs to collect a little bit. And I guess... What I really wonder, and I guess this is a little off topic, it has a lot to do with September 11th, because that sort of changed everything. I just remember after September 11th, there was such a sense of community just all the way around. I mean, you know, even in Hollywood, they were making songs about it in every respect, and there was support for the war in Afghanistan. It might have been before this, you know, these facts might have come out, but there was support for something, you know, that we needed to do something, at least just come together, if nothing else, and put a flag on your car or something of that nature. And now it just seems like, you know, I just wish we could do that. Not to that extent, I don't think it's going to happen again, but I just wonder, and I know that shows like this one help because it gives people the opportunity to, you know, call up and voice their opinion, and so that makes me feel good that people still care enough to talk about it and to think about it.
So what is your main point, Josh, as far as this camaraderie that existed after 9/11?
Well, I guess I just wonder, it seems like there's a lot of animosity that's built up about President Bush's actions, and if he was right, and it's just, you know, a lot of people feel really strongly on each issue, and I guess I just wonder, I mean, Do most people believe, and I guess you have your sort of finger on the pulse here of what most people think of what's going on, at least maybe more towards the left, do they think that we really entered this war because the president was lying to us and that they knew 100% that there really wasn't a threat, and this was about oil, or this was about his dad, or this was about anything other than what we were told? Do people believe it was a big lie from the beginning?
Well, let's let him answer that question, Ray. David Griffin? How do you feel about that, about the turn of events now?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite get what the question was exactly.
Okay, all right. Well, okay, we'll repeat it. Josh, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Basically, what he's asking is, you know, this great deal of animosity now that exists against this administration over Iraq and what has followed, the turn of events it's taken since the initial 9/11 incident. As you know, everybody just happened to stand by their man, President Bush, and he was thrust from a president who had in his first several months not distinguished himself as a very effective leader, and the economy was indeed still dragging. All of a sudden, out of a clear blue sky, comes 9/11, and he became a hero overnight. Now, several years later, and the next administration over, it seems as if this great antipathy, this great awakening, whatever you want to call it, to the fact that this administration has not been candid with the American people on anything, quite frankly, do you feel, basically the caller, I think, is asking whether or not you feel that this is the case now and that good is coming out of it, or whether or not you feel that there's some other reason behind this, the if you will, the ill will toward Washington.
Well, yeah, it's certainly the case that the president is as unpopular now as he was prior to 9/11. So mm-hmm. all the capital that was built up has been lost. In
yes.
fact, at before 9/11, he wasn't hated. He was just he was a figure of fun.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
was a joke.
Yes.
And suddenly, through you know, just the fact that there was this circumstance and people rally around the flag, and in this country rally around the president when there's what's considered a war, and he had some good speechwriters, why he suddenly becomes this larger-than-life figure, and meaning he could get anything through, including an enormous increase in the military budget, even though the Cold War is over, because now we got this substitute war. But as you say, these various revelations have led to a constant erosion, and particularly now a great increase with the Downing Street memos, mm-hmm. when we learn that all these Americans, now about 1,800 officially, and of course unofficially, far more have been killed in Iraq, and the ones who were killed in Afghanistan.
All right, Dave, stay where you are because I see the clock ticking. Take a break. Rodney, Doug, and Patrick will try to get you all in. Dave Raymond Griffin is our guest. 9/11, Lies and Distortions. We'll be right back. I'm Rick Adams. Professor David Raymond Griffin, Dave Griffin, we have more people that want to speak to you, but as we run out of this hour, can you stay a little bit into the next hour? Are you free?
I could stay about 10 more minutes.
Okay, well, we'll try to do that then. We'll try to continue a bit. Let's take these calls. Rodney in Texas. Hello, you're on the broadcast.
Good evening, and thank you for taking my call.
Yes, Rodney.
Dr. Griffin?
Yes, call him Ray, he says.
Yes, Ray.
No, I'm sorry. It's David.
Dave Ray Griffin.
Okay.
No, not Dave. David.
David Griffin. You'll have to pardon me. I had a long night.
Yeah. All right, brother. I understand.
Go ahead. Just ask your question, Roddy.
Well, you know, I just came from a website, accuracy.org, and they were talking about the 42% of Americans right now believe that Bush should be impeached. And I'm just wondering, in lieu of everything that has happened, all the revelations about the lies, and now we've got Patriot Act, you know, mm-hmm. being extended another 10 years. Nothing has been, no real criminals have been brought to trial over 9/11. How much more, David, do you think the American public will tolerate? It doesn't look like, you know, the media is moving very fast on this matter.
Well, that's the problem. The American public has very little voice anymore because you've got a lock on policy by the Republicans controlling both houses of Congress and the Supreme Court. And you've got a lock on the media by the corporate control, and the same kind of attitude. Now, a most important article has just appeared in this week's Harper's.
Mm-hmm.
This is by Mark Crispin Miller,
right?
And it's called "None Dare Call It Stolen," and then the subtitle talks about the servile media and the fact that, as Conyers' report revealed, and many other people had revealed, there is an enormous amount of evidence that Ohio was flat out stolen,
mm-hmm.
and yet the media simply will not deal with that story.
Right.
And that means that this administration most likely does not even belong in the White House this term, even if one might argue it did the first term, and that's debatable too. And Yet nobody will come out and talk about this publicly. Now, Miller is trying to get a few people to do this. Cynthia McKinney is a lone voice in the House of Representatives trying to get some attention to all of the enormous lies of 9/11.
Yes, sir.
So it's building up, but, you know, I think we're to the point where we could get 51% of the populace who wanted to impeach this administration, and still nothing would happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have one final question, brief question now. Have you noticed since the bombing over there in London, the chilling effect that has had on people speaking out over here, and how they beefed up the security in New York, and we're seeing pictures of people being searched with machine guns
in their
hands. Have you noticed the chilling? And do you think that this chilling effect might have something to do with maybe more people not speaking out about the lies from 9/11, even though...
Well, we've got a break. Thank you, Rodney, for your call. We'll have David answer that question when we come back. Okay, David?
Okay.
David Griffin will answer that question, and we will be back in the second hour for a few minutes with our guest. I'm Rick Adams, and we'll be back then.
Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
All right. Okay, we're back, and we can wrap up in a few minutes because David Griffin does have a busy schedule, and let's get right back to it, Dave. David, you were talking about, our caller had brought up a good point about whether there is a chilling effect now on people in this country as an aftershock to what's just happened in England. Do you see that?
Oh, well, of course, and quite likely that's the purpose.
Well,
because
I know
people who have families and families to support and families to protect. It's very difficult to be courageous when you're getting that kind of implicit threat.
Well, we've got Mr. Chertoff making some pronouncements now, who himself is quite a shady character and has a very checkered past in this administration as well as several others. And of course, he's putting on the grim face, the grim reaper, if you will. We're seeing Homeland Security, of course, increasing the budget right here where I come from. There's a little ferry, a private ferry company that takes people across the water to Block Island from the mainland of Rhode Island. And now we've got people aboard with M16 rifles just in case. And I'll tell you, this is all brand new. Following the London bombings. So there is definitely a degree of truth to that. Let's take a call from Doug in Texas. Hi, Doug. You're on the program with David Griffin.
Yeah, Peter, I'd just like to say that Comrade Chertoff is a very, very good man. He's a dual citizen or whatever, and I'm sure that David Griffin, if Mr. Griffin has checked it out, he knows exactly what I'm saying is truth. Right,
Mr. Griffin? What are you saying about Chertoff now? Go ahead, say it.
Well, he's just, he has dual citizenship.
With what other countries?
Israel.
All right, is that true?
Our best ally.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we know that Benjamin Netanyahu was tipped off now in England before the subway bombings, and, of course, they tried to backpedal that story very quickly. How do you feel about Mr. Chertoff and his his duplicity or lack thereof, David?
I'm not really an expert on him. I've just focused primarily on 9/11. There are so many dimensions to that. That's pretty much a full-time job. So
I've
heard these things, but I don't know them for facts.
Okay. All right. Any other questions, Doug?
Yeah. You didn't know that Mr. Chertoff was in charge of our criminal investigation division of the Department of Justice. He sent 160 Jewish spies back to Israel right after 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was aware of it. I don't know if David Griffin was aware of it, but
we
had the dancing and cheering Israelis. We know that. We had Philip Zelikow say that we went to this war in the Middle East to help defend Israel's interest. I think Dave Griffin, I think you know that he said that as well. There are many dimensions to this whole thing, and it looks as if we are serving the interests of the Zionists as well as the oil interests as well as all of these others. No question about that. All right, stay where you are. I have one more call, David Griffin, if you can hang on, can you?
Yes.
All right. David Griffin, our guest, and I'm Rick Adams. We'll be right back, and we'll be continuing on this subject. Thank you. Stay tuned.
Rick Adams is back. Live, uncensored, Radio Free America continues on the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yes, we're back, and we have a few more moments before David Griffin has to leave us. We might mention also, David, that the book by Nafiz Ahmed, The War on Truth, which I have and am reading right now, that book, of course, will be the basis, I think, of a test that we'll be performing later in the week. And in fact, we are planning to speak with Nafiz from England on Friday afternoon when we fill in for John Stadtmiller. We're hoping to do that live at that time, David.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, I wanted you to know that. So basically, obviously, there's a lot in this book that is quite similar to yours, and yet there is some additional information and analysis. And as I point out, the more people start analyzing it from different, various backgrounds and expertise, the more information now and more questions arise. And that's the thing. There are more questions now that are unanswered than there were in the first administration of George Bush. So it's interesting to see which way this could go, if in fact the media will bring down George Bush over this or use a side door, as it were, the back door to do it. It's going to be very interesting. Let's take this call now from Paul in Texas on the program. Hi, Paul. You're on with David Griffin. Hello. Did you drop off, Paul? All right, he did drop off. That's okay. That's good, because I want to use the few minutes that we have here just to recap a few things that I think are very important to recap. David, and one of them happens to be those explosions that indeed were heard, as you know, by New York City Fire Department personnel, and they were silenced, essentially, after they spoke to the commission. Essentially, they were treated like persona non grata, and yet they were hearing explosions come from the bottom of the building. Isn't that the case?
Well, that's right, and William Rodriguez has been
exactly
making as much noise about this as he can.
I'm reading about him right now again.
Yeah, and because he was in the basement and heard and felt, along with 13 or 14 other people, the explosions down below them in the sub-basements. And then this Philippe David came in all burnt. He had been standing in front of the elevator shaft, and the fire came up from down below and burned him, so his skin was, dripping off his Bones and, and Rodriguez saved him.
Yes.
NBC, he said, came out and spent a whole day interviewing him and then did not air a minute of it.
I mean, what excuse could NBC give on this one? Because they don't have to answer to the public, do they?
Yeah, well, Greg Szymanski wrote the article about this, and he called the guy who was in charge, and the guy claimed, well, this wasn't the dimension of things they were focusing on, and actually there was nothing new there. Well, that would be true if they had ever reported any all the other reports that there were explosions, but they didn't. And so Rodriguez's report that there were explosions in the basement of the North Tower, and also that he heard explosions in the South Tower as he was climbing the North Tower, that is new, and that would be news to the American people. But NBC News decided that it wasn't news.
Well, you know, I mean, I recall having spoken with a while ago, and I've been having a difficult time getting a hold of him now. This particular man who, well, whose own father-in-law spent a considerable amount of time working for British intelligence, MI6 in particular, and he has shown me evidence. In fact, he himself on his website, globeintel.com, had exposed the fact that he went to CBS 60 Minutes, Don Hewitt, with reports from declassified official government documents in which it was stated that Donald Rumsfeld in previous administrations had something to do with the strange death of scientist Frank Olson, all right, who was working on a number of projects going back to MK Ultra and so forth. And they said to him point blank, you are onto something, you have something, but we cannot touch the story. It is simply too big of a story to deal with. And you find these guys in the administration go in and out of revolving doors that also are part of the major international media. So you see these people and you know where they're coming from. You see their cohorts and fellow travelers, and it's no wonder if a reporter starts to stumble on something, he's just not permitted to follow through. Some editor, somebody higher than him, makes a conscious decision, in this case Don Hewitt of 60 Minutes at the time, that we weren't going to air that story, and we weren't going to do that story because that story is too big and we'd be stepping on big, big toes. And we can't.
That's right, and we have to be careful not to blame the reporters. Because, as you say, if they do go get a story and spend all that time, they're never going to get it published.
Mm-hmm.
And if they keep doing this, the management is pretty soon going to say, we found that you're no longer useful. And then you can't even quite blame the management because, you know, they're told you can do these kinds of stories, but you cannot touch this.
Mm-hmm.
So, unfortunately, it does go back to the fact that we are now living in a plutocracy rather than a democracy. And you know, there was a lot of talk in Washington. What our meeting was largely about was the need for media reform and the need for an alternative network of media organizations that might get some of the truth out to the American people. But it's very difficult given the plutocratic constraints. But at least some people are doing their best, and so a lot of information is getting out through shows like yours and the internet and C-SPAN and so on.
You have done how many interviews now? 120 or so?
This is this is number 120.
All right.
And let me. Mention to your listeners that if they don't have my book yet, if they just look under David Ray Griffin on Amazon.com, if they can't find my books in their local bookstores, they can get them on Amazon at discount.
Okay, they can do that. Very good. And before we get ready for the break here, just a couple of quick questions, if you have the time, and that is pertaining to what has just happened in England once again. As you know, there are some very startling parallels to what happened here in the United States. And, of course, that gives Tony Blair and George Bush the opportunity to say, well, see, didn't we tell you so? The similarities are there because it's Al-Qaeda. And I'm just reading every day. I read the New York papers, the major press, and every day the media, since that happened, have repeatedly been using the term the bombers. The bombers, not the suspected bombers, not the suspected terrorists, but the terrorists and the bombers, so that they have taken on the language that has been customarily brought about ever since 9/11 happened. We assume, even without a trial, even without a smoking gun, even without any firsthand empirical evidence, indeed evidence to the contrary, that we are going to call these people terrorists. We know who they are. They're Al-Qaeda. And I don't know about you, but I just shudder every time I hear that, because we know that's not the case. We haven't been given a smoking gun. And we just saw an innocent man shot to death, shot point blank right in the head in England over this whole sordid affair. And Tony Blair was nice enough to say, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And of course, there's no recourse because
A dead man can't come back.
That's right. And so we'll probably never know what the truth was behind that shooting.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, the point is that there is a growing rebellion, David, as you know, across America. And it is reflected in the polls, not only the polls doubting the administration's case for war, but now doubting the whole 9/11 story. I believe just about half of the public in the country, at least in New York, do not believe the official government report. And that has to say reams about the efforts of many like yourself and us and others in trying to just raise the questions that will not be answered by this government, period.
That's right. It would be very good now if we had a national poll like that Zogby poll in New York City and New York State that would ask the two questions. There was a Canadian poll that asked this, and they asked, do you believe the government had foreknowledge of the attacks and consciously allowed them to happen? Mm-hmm. And they got a very high percent. And then they asked the follow-up question, which was not asked in New York. Do you believe the government itself planned and orchestrated the attacks? And they had a significant percentage of the Canadians who said that already over a year ago. So it'd be interesting to know what it is now. And it would be most interesting to know what percentage of Americans already believe that.
I would gather to say the percentages have risen. I wouldn't doubt that in the least. David, once again, what's coming up on C-SPAN 2 this weekend? When is it coming up, and how can people watch it?
Well, they want to go to C-SPAN 2, which is Book TV.
Mm-hmm.
They can go on Google or somewhere and find the actual schedule. But as far as the times are constant across the nation, that is, you can calculate it from the Eastern time, and it'll be it would be 5 o'clock. Excuse me, 8 o'clock Saturday evening, Eastern time will be Nafiz Ahmed.
Right.
Interviewed, and then again, 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon,
all
Eastern
right.
time.
Okay. Hey, David Griffin, it's a pleasure again. Thank you for joining me. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Rick. Good
God
to be
bless
with you.
You. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. We'll be right back with more and more of your phone calls. I'm Rick Adams, Uncensored Radio. Free America continues.